Godspeed with Carol Hollenbeck, Sundays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom in an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Carol Hollenbeck. The simplest questions are the most profound. Where were you born? Where is your home? Where are you going? What are you doing? Think about these once in a while and watch your answers change. From the book Illusions by Richard Bach. Our guest today knows a few things about the twists and turns of life's journey and has watched her answers change along the way. A former attorney who practiced in Honolulu for 20 years, Audrey Kitagawa became the spiritual leader of the Light of Awareness, a worldwide community based in Hawaii, evolved from the wisdom of the avatar Sri Ramakrishna. A trustee of the Council for a Parliament of the World's Religions, Mother Audrey is a prolific writer on matters of spirituality and multiculturalism, and has served as advisor to the Office of the Special Representative of the Secretary General for Children and Armed Conflict at the United Nations. Mother Audrey, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Carol and Reverend Carol. I'm very happy to be with all of you today.
Well, before we begin the interview, I was wondering if you wouldn't mind laying a little spiritual foundation here, perhaps opening with a short prayer or blessing.
Yes, thank you. I'd be very happy to. All praise and glory be unto thee, O Lord, the giver of life and all good and perfect gifts, who alone is the doer, creator, transformer, and the remover of all our sorrows. Thank you for this privilege and opportunity to be in community together with Reverend Carol Hollenbeck, the members of Godspeed Institute, and those who are listening to this broadcast. Ignite our hearts with your divine light and wisdom, that we may live according to your universal laws of love, peace, harmony, and joy, and become beacons of hope and inspiration for all those whose lives we touch. May we learn to cultivate from more to more each day our love and devotion to you, that we may fully develop our hearts of compassion, respect, and caring for all of the members of our human family, Mother Earth, and all of life upon it. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much. Now, Audrey, you have a fascinating journey, and perhaps that would be a good place to begin. What is the story of your path and how it evolved? And please take your time. You have the floor.
Thank you. Well, it actually began when I met Divine Mother. And this was, she was the last person I met before I went off to law school in Boston. So I just graduated from college on the West Coast. I was home working during the summer. And a friend of mine said to me, Audrey, I know you are a sincere seeker, so you really must meet this lady. So she gave me her phone number, and I called her up, got instructions on how to find her home, and I went to visit with her. She opened the door, took one look at me, and said, you cannot serve two masters. And somehow in my heart, I just understood what she meant. And she proceeded to engage me for 5 hours with the most exquisite, spontaneous expositions on the divine that really opened my spiritual heart and stirred something within me, a deep and profound love that I had not experienced before. At the time, she spoke very rapidly, and she had a little bit of pidgin English. She only had an 8th grade education, but she said to me, "You don't have to remember everything I'm trying to tell you, because I am not communicating with you mind to mind, but I am transmitting to you spirit to spirit, heart to heart, infinite to infinite." So, you know, at the time, I didn't quite understand all of these very profound transmissions that she was giving to me. But she told me not to worry, because at any time that I needed to receive the appropriate message, it would spontaneously arise. And over the years, it has proven to be completely true. Whenever I am in a situation or facing a challenge, and somehow her words would just spontaneously arise. And I have found them to be very helpful to me over the years. So I just totally fell in love with her, and I didn't realize at the time that she was actually giving me the whole story of her life from beginning to the end. And I also didn't realize that she had left out disclosure of one thing. And it was incumbent upon me to find what that one thing was. So anyway, she talked about God, and it was just listening to this beautiful, incredible, flowing yet powerful stream of pure, unadulterated consciousness that seemed to be a link to the ultimate reality. When you look at her physically, she looked very ordinary. She, in my mind at the time, was just a very adorable, cute Japanese lady. She was born in the little sugar town of Waipahu in Honolulu, Hawaii. And she was a householder, and she said she came for the householders, people who are in the pattern of family life, who have work responsibilities, who have many attachments, and she was here to help them to realize the reality of who we really are. And so she said that our purpose in life is to realize God. So God realization was the ultimate goal. As householders, because of our attachments, it's very difficult. And yet, through her own life, she was able to demonstrate how you could be a householder and still realize God in the midst of all of your duties and responsibilities. Because she was married, had 5 children, and she cooked, she cleaned, she washed, and yet drew this incredible crowd of people who would come to see her so they too could be bathed in this incredible love that you really felt when you were with her. So I took down her name and address and just could not get her out of my mind. I mean, I feel that at that moment that I met her, I really understood what it felt like to be totally and unconditionally loved and to be surrounded by such nurturing, simultaneously empowering love that I felt my life had been transformed through this meeting. So taking down her name and address, I went off to law school and started to write to her. And, you know, law school can be very challenging, and it certainly was challenging for me. And yet she became an anchor for me to be able to share my innermost struggles with. And she was very kind to write to me because, you know, back in those days, we didn't have cell phones. It was very expensive to call from the East Coast to Hawaii. The distance was very far away. And so, you know, you wrote letters. And I used to wait to receive her letters. And in the meantime, I remember being in school one day and feeling really, really down. And so I went back to my apartment, picked up the Yellow Pages phone book, opened it to churches, and my finger just ran down and stopped at the Sri Ramakrishna Vedanta Society. So I picked up the phone, and a man with a very heavy Indian accent answered the phone. And I asked, are you open? And he said, no, we're not open. And I said, well, would I be able to come and visit? And he said, well, I'm on my way to MIT, but I will wait for you. So he gave me instructions on how to catch the Green Line trolley to go to the Ramakrishna Vedanta Center. So I hopped on the trolley, went over there, and as it turned out, this Indian man was Swami Sarvagatananda. And notwithstanding the fact that he had another appointment to go to, it was as if he had all the time in the world. He was very gracious, very accommodating, and, you know, sat down and shared with me about Sri Ramakrishna. And somehow I just felt that I had come home, that I had finally found my shoes. So in the course of my, I was just so joyous and so happy, and so I went back home and I started to write to Divine Mother that I had finally found my chosen ideal, and it was Sri Ramakrishna. And she wrote back to me. She said, you know, she, tears of joy were flowing as she was writing the letter, and she said that you are my spiritual child. And at that time, I didn't realize, but have since come to discover, that that is the one thing she didn't tell me about. Was Sri Ramakrishna, because her own history really has great involvement with Sri Ramakrishna, but she didn't mention his name. So when she started to tell me about Sri Ramakrishna in her letter, I was astounded and was very curious, and I said to myself, well, how does she know about Sri Ramakrishna? Because, you know, I studied philosophy and religion as an undergraduate, and I never heard of Sri Ramakrishna. So how would, you know, this Japanese lady with only an eighth grade education growing up in a little sugar town in Waipahu in Hawaii, how could she possibly know about Sri Ramakrishna and be telling me all these things about Sri Ramakrishna? And so I knew that there was something very phenomenal that was unfolding here. Mm. And so I felt very happy. And I accepted her as my mother. So in any event, I started to go to the center every Sunday, and also on Thursday evenings taking Bhagavad Gita classes from the Swami. And I really wanted to be initiated in this path. And Swami, in the meantime, I had shown to Swami all of the letters that Divine Mother had written to me. And he said to me, no, no, I cannot initiate you. Your spiritual mother must initiate you. And one of the messages that she had transmitted to me during my first meeting with her was that she was told not to teach because she's not a teacher. The teacher and the student is in the human plane. So that popped up, and I shared that with Swami, and he said, no, no, nonetheless, must ask her for permission. And only if she gives permission, then I will initiate you. So I wrote back to Divine Mother, and I said, well, you know, I want to be initiated, and this is what Swami says, and, you know, what is your response? And she wrote back to me, and she said, as I had previously told you, the teacher and the student is in the human plane. She said, please thank the Swami for me, and if I were you, I would study as much as I can under the Swami. So I took that as a yes. And I shared the letter with Swami. And he said, well, he would initiate me. And so, you know, I waited, and he never initiated me. So I said, well, Swami, when are you going to initiate me? And he said, yes, yes. And he would do this hand gesture, and that would be the end of it. And then I'd ask him again, you know, respectfully waiting a few weeks later, and he'd say, yes, yes, and do that same hand gesture. And finally, it was coming to be the summer, and I had to go back to Hawaii for my job there. And I said, well, Swami, I'm leaving for Hawaii. You haven't initiated me. When are you going to initiate me? Because I really wanted to be initiated before I went back to Hawaii. And he said, well, I thought about it, and maybe sometime in October on a very auspicious day. And so I thought to myself, October? Oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to go through the whole summer without my initiation. But there really was nothing that I could do, so I had to accept that fact. Mm-hmm. And I went back to Hawaii, and when I returned, Divine Mother initiated me. Mm. And and you know, and that summer was just filled with such joy for me just to be with her.
And now you are the Divine Mother of the community that was passed along.
That's right.
Now, you've mentioned several times Ramakrishna, and I would just like to stop there for a moment, because he is referred to as the Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
And the word Avatar is one that in our awareness culturally today, due to some popular stories, films, and internet identities, has taken on certain meaning. But strictly spiritually speaking, what is an avatar?
Well, very briefly, an avatar is a divine incarnation of God embodied in a human form. And, you know, they manifest incredible divine love and are able to transmit universal truths in very compelling ways that transforms consciousness and deepens our connection to God.
And Sri Ramakrishna, could you share some about his life and his legacy?
Well, Time magazine called Sri Ramakrishna the avatar of the century. And he was born in 1836 in West Bengal, India, and left his body in 1886. So he had a very short 50-year lifespan.
Hmm.
He attended a village school for about 12 years, but stopped because he did not want to have the kind of education that he said only prepared him to be a breadwinner. So he really preferred to be in the company of renunciates and monks who gave him instructions on sacred texts and literature. And when Sri Ramakrishna was a teenager, his older brother, Ram Kumar, started a Sanskrit school in Calcutta, and he also served as a priest. So Sri Ramakrishna moved to Calcutta to help his brother with his priestly duties. Later, his brother was appointed to be the priest of Dakshineswar Kali Temple, which is built by Rani Rajmani, a very wealthy Indian woman and benefactor. And Sri Ramakrishna came to Kali Temple as his brother's assistant. But when his brother passed away a year after assuming the position, Sri Ramakrishna took over as the priest of the Kali Temple. And while he was there, he encountered teachers of Tantra, which has a, of course, I'm giving, you know, very, very brief explanations. I mean, volumes and volumes have been written about these words that I'm using. But basically, it's a world-embracing vision of all of reality as an expression of the joyous divine through, for example, the play of Shakti or divine energy with Shiva, who is the transformer, and has spiritual practices and rituals that aim to bring about an inner realization of truth that is supposed to give one freedom from ignorance and rebirth. Also, teachers of Vedanta, which favors an individual's quest for truth through meditation and a very loving morality. So the devotees of this tradition also feel very secure in the knowledge that infinite bliss will await them, you know, as a goal of God realization. And a teacher of Vaishnava, which is a tradition of Hinduism that worships Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, and is also associated with avatars such as Rama and Krishna as the original and supreme God. He also studied Islam, and at the time that he studied Islam, Sri Ramakrishna had a vision of a very radiant personage with a kind of grave countenance and white beard, resembling the prophet, who actually merged with his body. And Sri Ramakrishna also studied Christianity, and he at that time had a vision in which Jesus also merged with his body. He worshipped Mother Kali, who is a Hindu goddess, and her name Kali comes from Kala, which means the black one. So she's sometimes presented as dark and violent and as a figure of annihilation. But she is worshipped as the ultimate reality, or Brahman, as the redeemer of the universe, and as well as a very benevolent mother goddess. And it was through his worship of Mother Kali that Sri Ramakrishna experienced what he described as a limitless, infinite, effulgent ocean of pure consciousness, and was bathed in an undiluted bliss where he felt the presence of Divine Mother.
Mm. Thank you very much, Audrey. Now, you mentioned the words householders and breadwinners, and of course this inspires thoughts of so much, so many people, everyday people, and opening up spirituality for all of us, that it's not something reserved strictly for monks or retreatants, but to be lived out in the sacred of our everyday lives. It comes to mind also, for example, the Third Order of Franciscans was the order for the householders and the breadwinners in the community to try to, you know, to focus on the sacred part of their lives and their work during the day. Now, toward this, could you please share about practical spirituality and the categories that you refer to as the external and internal self?
Well, you know, practical spirituality basically is developing your inner life through disciplined practice, whether through prayer, meditation, having quiet time to communicate with God, to be in nature, ultimately so that we can become better human beings, more loving, more caring, more thoughtful, more appreciative, and so forth. So this is the development of the inner life. And in the Bible, it says that the kingdom of God is already within each person.
Yes.
And so we have inherited the entire kingdom of God, and it's already within us. So as we cultivate this inner discipline to make that connection, we are able to grow in insights that ultimately help us to translate the beauty and the power of those insights into external action. And that external action helps us to understand that we have responsibility in the world, and how we move in the world has impact on everything and everyone around us. And so through the cultivation for our love and devotion to God within the sacred chambers of our own hearts, that we grow in gratitude for this sacred gift of life. And we really grow to appreciate the astounding genius and creativity of God in the abundance of all the beauty of the flowers, the trees, the sun, the moon, the stars. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
So it's magnificent and very humbling at the same time. So Divine Mother always said, we cannot make a blade of grass or a drop of blood. Yet God has provided for us a whole world of miraculous, wondrous life forms. so we are very blessed. But, you know, it is often said that those who have been given much also have great responsibility.
Yes.
And because we have been given the whole kingdom, we actually have great responsibility to be shepherds of the earth and to learn to align our lives through our thoughts, speech, and action with the universal divine laws of love, peace, harmony, and joy. Hmm. And therefore, it is a call to all of us to undertake the ceaseless, fearless self-examination, the self-reflection, to see how we must change and to see our role in making this world a better place. So we start with the inner development and how we are in relationship to ourselves. Ultimately, we will be in relationship to others. And so we have to, you know, be in loving relationship first to ourselves, that we may be in loving relationship to those around us in our family life, in our community life, and ultimately the world. Hmm. So no person is ever absolved of responsibility to do whatever is necessary to become the most wholesome, integrated, loving and compassionate person that we can be. So it speaks to an internal self-development that becomes externalized and manifested in our daily thoughts, speech, and actions.
Thank you so much, Audrey. We are halfway through the program now. You are listening to the Godspeed Institute live on the Progressive Radio Network. We're going to take a short break, and afterwards we will continue our conversation with Divine Mother Audrey Kitagawa, leader of the worldwide community Light of Awareness. Let's spend a couple of minutes now with Louis Armstrong. Stay with us.
Some of you young folks been saying to me, "Hey, Pops, what you mean, what a wonderful world? How about all them wars all over the place? You call them wonderful? And how about hunger and pollution? They ain't so wonderful either. But how about listening to old Pops for a minute? Seems to me it ain't the world that's so bad, but what we are doing to it. And all I'm saying is, see what a wonderful world it would be if only we'd give it a chance. Love, baby, love. That's the secret. Yeah. If lots more of us loved each other, we'd solve lots more problems. And then this world would be a guesser. That's why old Pops keeps saying, I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed days, dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute, live on the Progressive Radio Network. We're talking with Audrey Kitagawa, leader of the worldwide Light of Awareness community. And how about all them wars, as Lewis says, Audrey? In this part of the program, I would like to explore more of your specific efforts and pursuits and philosophy around greed and materialism, militarism, and war from your many efforts and writings around the world. critically urgent work?
Well, I think materialism is front and center to this whole movement of economic globalization. And it's become a kind of market fundamentalism, which wants to allocate resources solely to market mechanisms. And any interference with that is seen as reducing the efficiency of the economy. So economic globalization has really created global financial markets and the growth of transnational corporations, which have increasingly dominated national and global economies. So the salient feature of the globalized financial market is the fact that financial capital is able to move around so freely. And, you know, the positives of globalization have seen the acceleration of technological innovations, which have really benefited millions of people around the world, and open doors to international trade that have helped many countries to grow far more quickly than they would otherwise have grown. And the export have, you know, led growth in ways and industrialization, caused industrialization in Asia, for example, which have left millions of people better off. However, you know, Michael Clare, who's the author of Resource Wars, indicated in his book that overseas supplies and vital resources have come to dominate national security strategy. So the economic and security interests of the country are now inextricably linked. So what this has done is it's placed a high priority on the protection of vital resource supplies. So it is military power that can ensure the continued flow, for example, of oil and other critical materials from or through distant areas. And the role of the military to protect the international flow of essential materials has become quite crucial. So almost every country in the world sees the pursuit and protection of essential materials as paramount to its security planning. And resource concerns figured prominently in the organization, deployment, and use of many of the world's military forces. So it is seen as one of the state's primary security functions because global demand for materials is growing really at an unsustainable rate. As population grows, societies require more of everything, whether it's food, water, energy, timber, oil, minerals, and so forth. So every society is also increasing its use of basic resource materials. So in the past 50 years alone, the population has grown by over 3 billion people, and we are now at 7 billion people. And we will be close to 9 billion people in, you know, a relatively short period of time. So this factor, together with the spread of industrialization to more areas around the world, has really produced an insatiable appetite for goods to accommodate the growing numbers of people. But, you know, the natural resources are limited in supply. So to the extent powerful countries are able to dominate and control limited resources to sustain their own interests, they will be able to ensure that their own levels of consumption can be met without regard to the impact that that would have on others.
Yeah.
So really we must understand that the financial markets are amoral and they allow people to act on their own interests. And financial markets are designed to create wealth and not to take care of social needs. So it's based on competition. And heedless pursuit of profit can hurt the environment and conflict with other social values. So market deals with the exchange of goods and services and the accumulation of profit, and it does not deal with issues of morality and social justice. So to the extent that we do not incorporate these values into our commerce, we do allow the problems of greed and pure self-interest to hurt us all. We can see just from our own recent history that the relentless pursuit of materialism has powerful negative consequences in the wars, in the collapse of huge sectors of our economy, such as the housing market and the promotion of collateralized debt obligations that were fueled by unrealistic spending habits and consumption, the collapse potential collapse of large financial institutions, countries on the brink of insolvency with huge debt obligations, which, you know, we're worried they may not be able to meet, a widening gap between the very rich and the very poor, and of course, ultimately, the severe environmental degradation and exploitation.
Yes, and thank you for that answer. But as we tend to want to approach these crises with another material solution or another monetary solution, what you're saying here runs much deeper, and it's based on our values, and at their core, the values are spiritual in nature. I would just like to bring you back to your own words in an article you wrote, a couple of really great quotes here. The greater the drive to selfishly seek fulfillment and satisfaction in the material realm without regard to the welfare of the other members of the global family, the greater the tension, imbalance, and lack of harmony within the global community. And also, the less we know about the nature of who we are, the more predisposed we are towards self-indulgence and the unbridled consumption of material goods to satisfy immediate pleasures and wants. Can you take a moment then, in light of these quotes, to share then about the nature of who we are, the real nature of who we are, in alignment with universal laws and harmony, balance, and love?
Well, you know, this has been the perennial question that all seekers are posed within themselves and by their spiritual masters. Who are you? And when you strip down your occupation, your name, what you own and how much you own, I mean, what is the essence that is there? And what is there is the immortal, eternal self that is already one with God and is that endless stream and wellspring of infinite divine love. And in reality, regardless of how we may be attached to the material realm, you know, we cannot divest who we are from our, you know, the essence of our own nature. And our nature is divine. Our nature and God is love. So no matter what the external world may be manifesting before our eyes in all of its challenges and seeming difficulties and our concern about the greed and the imbalances that we see, what we have been given of this infinite divine love compels us to address these externalized problems through the divine wisdom and creative energy that is also part of the essence of who we are, to find solutions. And, you know, what is happening with all of the problems that we are seeing in the external world is it's causing a huge awakening to the problems that have really ignited civil society in massive ways to mobilize, and through our information technologies and networks and social media, you know, we are able to mobilize in unprecedented ways to advocate, for example, for reforms to help each other in our communities. People are beginning to feel that governments cannot be relied upon to meet their needs and are taking more and more responsibility to discover ways in which they can actively participate in creating positive change and transformation. You know, while we cannot take governments or businesses out of the global equation, we must always remember that all governments, all businesses, and all institutions are run by people. And then we come down to the essence of what you were addressing. I mean, who is the essence of people? Who comprises this community of people? It's comprised of individuals. And we are back again to the aspect of the inner and outer that we were talking about earlier, the need for each person to assume personal responsibility to develop their spiritual lives. So that becomes the foundation from which your values arise and becomes the framework to and principles for living. So it's important that people be educated in spiritually centered living. And this place responsibility squarely upon the individual to develop his spiritual life and to bring about those positive values and principles by which to live that ultimately help us to become better human beings. And, you know, this, I feel, is the way forward. A vibrant civil society that is comprised of individuals who are willing to develop their inner lives and to translate the beauty of their inner lives into external action that calls for positive advocacy and on-the-ground activities. So, you know, when we talk about action, externalizing our actions, you know, we always have to have wisdom in any undertaking, whether it's through proper study, research, understanding, consultative processes, and cooperative engagement. You know, but really that will be based on mutual respect, civility, good manners, and ultimately that will help us to maximize dignified interaction. Because we are talking about maintaining and preserving and enhancing the dignity of our lives. And why is it important to do that? Because our lives are sacred. And as with all things sacred, we have to really honor it, respect it, and take very good care of it. Mm-hmm. Just as we wouldn't go into a mosque, a temple, or synagogue and, you know, desecrate it or behave badly within it, it is a place where we come to make our connection, to show our reverence. And so in this way, too, our very life itself is sacred. So we must not behave in ways that would desecrate or degrade that in any way. Not in our thoughts, not in our speech, not in our actions, not in relationship to ourselves, and not in relationship to each other. So, you know, these global challenges really becomes the mirror to force us to tap deep within ourselves to find creative and dynamic solutions that give us as a human family hope and inspiration for alternative ways of living. So the environmental movement, for example, has given us greater awareness that the need to stop using plastic bags for our groceries, plastic bottles for our water, and that we should consider alternative energy sources like solar, wind, and, you know, looking at different ways that we can have hybrid cars, you know, all different kinds of energy engines. So people are paying attention. And there's a whole slew of changes that we can make in our daily lives to do our part in healing and protecting our environment, for example. So, and let's take, for example, you, the important work that you are doing. It's sounding the call to return to our spiritual lives, to end religious violence and
yes.
And to create better balance by not being overly preoccupied with the physical, material, and mental priorities, but
yes.
rather to remember that our what natural goodness, caring, and creativity can be put into service for the common good. So every problem in our lives compels us to find a solution, a better way. And it becomes a self-referred process of inner inquiry and connection that ultimately expresses itself in an outward giving. So Divine Mother often told me that giving is life and taking is death. And she said, you see the pigs at the trough? They're not looking left or right to see if the other pigs are eating. They're only eating whatever they can get for themselves. But this lack of regard for whatever the needs of others are ultimately hurts us all. And I think inherently, as spiritual beings, we do understand that on a very deep and fundamental level.
Thank you so much, Mother Audrey, for sharing your wisdom with us today. And I wanted to ask you, if people wanted to learn more about your work after this conversation, where should they go?
They can go to lightofawareness.org.
And they will find...
I'm sorry, Light of Awareness. Gee, you know, I don't even know my own.
It's all in the details. You know, I've learned that. I've learned God is in the details, and you know, so is the devil.
That's right. I think it's the Light of Awareness International Spiritual Family.org, but, you know.
Yes, I think you're right. It is the Light of Awareness.
Okay.
org. I wanted to thank you so much for being on the program, and also thank all your spiritual ancestors, and remembering your inspiration, a little lady. In Hawaii. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today, and perhaps we can visit again in the future.
Well, thank you so much, Reverend Carol. And again, I want to thank you and your wonderful Godspeed Institute for all of the work that you are unfolding in the world. It is extremely important work, and I applaud you and your courage and your commitment to help make this world a better place. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. So much. I appreciate that very deeply from my heart.
Infinite blessings to you and the good work that you do.
Thank you, Mother Audrey. Before we close this week's program, here is this week's Godspeed tip for your spiritual tool belt that you wrap around yourself with love each day. Clear a sacred space. One of my favorite films is Field of Dreams, a beautiful, powerful, and mystical exploration of imagination and reconciliation. Its spiraling journey and freewheeling spirituality lead actually to the last 5 minutes of the film, in which Kevin Costner and his late father bridge death, time, and space to share healing, love, and proper closure between them. This marvelous event occurs in a special space, a field that has to be marked off and cleared, designated, a place apart from the rest of everyday life. This space is within Costner's real physical environment, the cornfield on his farm, but it is set apart from it, and it is this intentionality that makes it magical, consecrated, and a perpetual invitation. We can make such a physical space in our lives, even in our own homes. You can enjoy what I call an angel room in your home. It's a special doorway to the universe, and it can be an extra room, an attic with a skylight, a cupola or alcove set apart for divine meetings, candlelit revelations and wonder. Prayer and contemplation thrive in such nests of spiritual growth. But more important, we can clear such a space for healing within us, in our heart, soul, and mind. Healing begins within each one of us, and transformation happens one person at a time, one heart at a time. When I make a space for healing in my life, a sacred clearing, even a baseball diamond, becomes holy ground. Thank you for joining us for the Godspeed Institute today. This show was recorded live on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City, engineered by Myron Bitts and produced by Michael Hallenbeck. If you would like to hear this or any of our previous shows again, or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. Please send your comments to office@GodspeedInstitute.com. We always love to hear from you. And as always, join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.